Bearded Bowman.
Welcome back, everybody. You are here. We're at season three with Bearded Biomed, and I have a very special guest joining us today, someone that I've wanted to get on the show for a really long time to touch on his expertise. As you know, we have partnered with MedWrench for this particular episode, put out a questionnaire to the field, Ask the Expert, the gals at MedWrench put together, and you guys fielded us some questions that we'll try to get to as many of them as we can today. But today I have with us the man, the myth, the legend himself, Herman McKenzie from Joint Commission. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. You're too kind, Chase. I'm just a regular guy.
Well, you know, with certain titles, certain positions, there's a little bit of, you know, you get a little bit of a prop up here on this show. Okay. So okay. Just appreciate you having the time. I know everybody in the biomed field and especially your side of it as well. We have busy schedules, so thank you for being here. For the folks that maybe have not heard of you,
would you
just mind just giving you a little background of who you are, where you come from, that kind of
thing? Sure. My title is Director of the Physical Environment Department at the Joint Commission. And so the Joint Commission is the largest accrediting organization in the United States. Apart from accrediting organizations in the United States, we do accredit worldwide. So I work out of our central office, which is in the suburbs of Chicago. And one of our roles is to provide standards interpretation, reach out, communicate, support customers through the accreditation process. A unique, background for me, which makes me a little more attractive as a participant is, I started off my career before getting into compliance. I started off, as we used to call it, the biomed field. And so, I came up through those ranks. I have been a manager, I've been a director, and did branch out, but I still have roots in the in biomed, or as we now call it, HTM.
I love hearing people's journeys, you know, where they started from, where they're going, especially with having you be a part of the biomed community is pretty awesome. So as I alluded to before, there are some questions that some folks have sent in. You know, there's a wide variety of just sounds like some people have experience with TJC and some are not that familiar. And I think this is a great thing just to help educate, you know, an audience to get some of their quandaries asked. The first one I got for you today is there currently or can you reference a website that gives us biomeds a quick guide to compliances, i.e. NFPA 99, JCA ISO? I feel like it's difficult to find updated guides to these. If there isn't one, could we get one made?
Sure. Great question. So when I do my speaking engagements, whether it be virtual or in person, one of the things I try to hammer home is go to our accreditation manual. You can look at it in ink. We have all our requirements in the accreditation manual. All our accredited customers are entitled to one, and you do have access to one. And so that way you can go to the source. I know that many times people say, well, I know that someone told me this or they told me that. And even if a Joint Commission person tells you something, ask for them to reference it in the accreditation manual. Now, there are elements in our accreditation manual that takes, it's rooted based off of NFPA code. So if you want to find out some of the whys behind, sure, you can go to the NFPA website and you can purchase a copy. But you don't have to purchase a copy of our accreditation manual if you're one of our accredited customers. So go to the manual. Any updates that we have, We always try to give the field at least 6 months in advance. So you should not be surprised. We publish what we call the pre-publication standards. So if we know a change is coming down the road, we want to give you as much notice as possible because we know that it affects your operations.
Yeah, I will say that y'all do a really good job at providing notice. That it's been appreciative to a lot of the medical facilities that I take care of. because there's not so much as a surprise coming. If there are changes, then they have time to adapt, which, you know, a 6-month window is, I would argue, probably enough time to do so. So yeah, great question. That's good to know. So there's a resource out there available for you guys. Next question. What are some recommendations Joint Commission could provide biomed programs to have a successful audit?
Sure. So I'm going to go back to my response to the first question. When you look at our accreditation manual, and there are other resources that you have as well. For instance, if you're an accredited customer, you have a dedicated account representative, account executive, at the Joint Commission. You also, part of being our accredited customer, we make sure that there's a designated contact at your healthcare organization. And so that person should be able to walk you through the resources, the publications that are free to you. Now, when I go back to the accreditation manual, as you go through it and read it, and you look at the sections that are specifically dedicated to medical equipment, you will see that there are certain requirements that has a D beside it. And that means there's a document requirement. And so the expectation is that you have to have documentation to show that you're being compliant with this requirement. Now, that always brings about the question, Herman, listen, we're in 2023. You know, we're not carrying around binders. That's fine. You can have a hard copy or you can have an electronic copy, right? And so as long as it's part of the survey process, when we ask for the documentation requirement, you can produce it, that is fine. So I hope that helps folks out.
I've had several inspections where, because my company, we utilize a web-based system for a CMMS. And whenever I have to go through and they're asking for particular documentation on, let's say, a device or something along those lines, we're able to do a quick, you know, search through our PDFs and our files through that web-based, and there's been no issue whatsoever. I mean, I'm running it directly off of a tablet. Whatever you have written down, make sure you're doing it. Do what you say what you do.
Exactly.
I think that's probably the number one advice I've given people when it comes as well to this. Ooh, this is a good one. What are some of the most common flags that may be found during an audit?
So I ran a report a little earlier, a few weeks earlier, just to see what are the top issues that we're seeing with medical equipment. And I've been doing it a little bit different recently. I've been looking at it in terms of the number, and then we also do it by risk. And so in terms of the number of top scored, it's just missing PMs, right? Missing the inspection, testing, and maintenance intervals. So that's the top issue. In terms of the top risk, because our surveyors, we can identify, you know, the deficiencies by risk. And the top one are really sterilizer maintenance.
Really?
You can imagine, you know, infection control issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always said this. If there's infection control issues in an organization, and there's a medical equipment issue in an organization, it's probably around sterilizers.
Yeah.
And our surveyors, you know, they're quick to pick up on that and pull that thread. Another thing that I like to point out to our audience, and I do this when I do my speaking engagements, would you believe that many of these observations or deficiencies aren't necessarily cited by life safety code surveyors? They are cited by our clinical staff. Why? Because our clinical staff are the ones, they know. They've used the infusion pumps. They've used the EKG machines. They've used the physiological monitors. So they know that. Now, we have some that no longer work in the field, but we also have clinical surveyors that still work in hospitals and healthcare institutions. So I'd like to put that bit of information out to our audience whenever I'm speaking.
Surveyors, I mean, they can come from a wide variety of the medical background for sure. And, you know, that's very interesting. You brought up that sterilizers might be a number one cause. It makes sense, especially from an infection control standpoint. You know, it's going to tie back to something going on in the process in that sterile processing department.
Yep.
That's That's pretty cool. I mean, not cool for the patients, but it's good to know.
It's a good, piece of information to have.
I have heard of biomeds leaving to pursue roles as a surveyor with Joint Commission and was curious if that is common. I understand that Herman started in biomed. How would one pursue a career route?
Sure. So, we have folks who, evaluate the physical environment, and we do. Actually, one of our surveyors, he has, if I'm correct, a patent on some cardiology equipment. And so we do have folks with the medical equipment background, very, very knowledgeable field surveyors. We don't exclude someone. So the reason why I had the opportunity is not just because I had the medical equipment background, although, George Mills brought me on, and that was a plus for him. But I also, during my career, I was attracted to issues of overall compliance. And so even prior to coming to the Joint Commission, I had an opportunity to be the leader or the chair of my hospital's environment of care or safety committee. And as I went to different hospitals, they realized I had that background. So that responsibility, as I went from hospital to a different hospital, they said, oh, you were the chair? Guess what, Herman? You got to be the chair of the
By the way, you're
forward. So I had that interface with the Joint Commission. If you look at my shirt, it says Healthcare Engineer Society of Northern Illinois. And there are Joint Commission being, based in Illinois. There were Joint Commission people in Illinois. And so I had some interface with some Joint Commission staff even prior to coming on board. So maybe that was my cheat code. But one of the things I am starting to say this going forward, I think you become an even better HCM leader if you're not myopic. If you look at the role, not necessarily just of your department, but the role that your department plays in the overall healthcare scheme and the things that your healthcare leadership is looking for. And I think it broadens your perspective and you can see how you fit in.
I'm just curious, the process wise, do you just go to like a joint commission website? And I'm assuming there's like a career tab or something that people could go on and fill out an application and such.
Correct. It just happened when I was looking, to get specifically into compliance. There was an opening and, things just worked out that way. It was a perfect confluence of things coming together.
That sounds pretty straightforward, folks. Looks like we got some more biomeds might be interested in heading that way, though. As a biomed, we have had numerous surveyors over the years, and everyone comes from different backgrounds, different experiences. I know where this is going. It's joked about that while the standards are the standards, each surveyor will interpret those standards differently. This is a two-part question. One, is Joint Commission's stance on this, or what is Joint Commission's stance on that? And two, if a biomed department does experience this occurrence, is there any way to get a second surveyor's input, or what is the process in regards to that?
Sure. So, Chase, I want to let folks know, I understand during the survey process, there's a lot of anxiety and, staff members may feel that they're challenging. They don't want to challenge a surveyor. However, our surveyors are aware that if a customer asks for a call during the mid-survey with the central office, they will, they'll accommodate that. Believe it or not, they'll accommodate that call. And if it's a matter of, an organization feels that they are compliant in a certain area, they can ask for clarity. Now, let's assume the survey is passed and you go, oh, shucks. I think we were compliant at that time. What do I do? You have 10 days at the conclusion of receiving your final report to submit what we call a clarification. And that clarification is essentially your position that, at the time of the survey, you cited me for this, but we were compliant. And we review that. We review that earnestly and honestly to make sure that if we did cite you in error or we have new information or information that shows that you were compliant, then that's okay. Now, I must say, one of the things that we can't look at for compliance on a clarification is if you just turn in documentation late. Now, if you turn in something, if you ask for PMs or some your inventory, and for some reason you don't turn it into the surveyor that asked when it was asked, and you go, okay, yeah, I found it. My laptop's working now or something of that nature. We cannot accept late paperwork for clarification.
I mean, that I have seen that occur, and that's not necessarily a reason to, you know, get in a tiff with the surveyor to begin with, because you know that you're within your window, that you're going to be having a visit, having a discussion about your documentation for your particular department. I can't sympathize a lot with somebody that doesn't have their documents in order to begin with, because especially in our field as biomeds, documentation is paramount. And I think a lot of it kind of it's not taken as seriously everywhere like we would like it to be. That's one of the things I really try to drive home with a lot of my newer technicians that I bring on, is you have to be right with paperwork. There's way too much, especially like the company I work with, where we're an ISO certified company. You know, our paperwork, we like to say, has to be on par or better than the manufacturer, because we are that bridge between the OEM and the medical facility. We have to make sure that we have our documents ready to go, always, you know, they're buttoned up. It's a big part of biomed, you know, besides obviously fixing things and checking things to simplify it, but have your paperwork ready.
So, Chase, let me give you an example. And I think people at the hospital or healthcare organization level, it may not be at the top of mind. You bringing a vendor to do some work, right? Mm-hmm. And they've done the work, but they haven't submitted the paperwork, right? And you go, oh, shucks, we know that it was done. I just didn't get that paperwork. So even if it's a vendor that you've hired to do the work, the expectation is that you'd have the documentation at the ready.
Absolutely. We're not a part of the facility. We're considered a vendor as well. So if we want to continue having a relationship with them, conducting business going forward, the providing of documentation is necessary for that. All right, next question. When a surveyor asks to run a trace on a device, how far back can they request, and what exactly are they looking for in that trace?
Sure. A general rule of thumb is that, if you're an accredited organization, and assuming that you just have regular surveys, we come every 3 years. So if a surveyor asks for documentation, they can go back to the last triennial survey. So, you know, that's what you should have in your head. Okay, make sure everything from the previous 3 year survey is up to date.
That's pretty straightforward. Our biomed department was applauded by the surveyor during our recent visit, which was great for us. Unfortunately, facilities did very badly to the point that several key people lost jobs, and they even brought up moving away from Joint Commission to DMV, which we highly discourage. Instead, the solution should be to fix the problems and not go to a different accrediting body because you didn't like the outcome. Do you have any advice on how we can navigate those waters or provide counsel in regards to this?
So I can tell you, I know years ago, I haven't done this recently, but I did this years ago, and medical equipment deficiencies or observations at the time, I have 2.7% or something like that. So HTM folks are doing a great job. I think the nature of the HTM individual is to be very, you know, granular, to be very detail oriented. It's just part of the makeup of the folks in this field. And I'm going to say we're the ones, but the HTM folks were the ones that really outline or set the stage or set the standard for risk-based approach to medical equipment, the CMMS, you know, guidelines, those types of things. So I would reach out to my colleagues, and believe it or not, there are other folks, there are many HCM folks, almost like me, that end up branching out and, you know, taking on additional roles. So it's the same thing follows, right? The same thing follows. Follow what the manual says. Don't just get caught up into, you know, the day break fix mentality. Put in processes and programs. One of the things that I've said, and of course I've managed facilities or maintenance departments, you know, in addition to just medical equipment departments. One of the differences that I've found, and it's just an inherent difference. Remember I said that the clinical folks, they find HCM deficiencies. When you're an HCM manager, you are managing equipment that people put their hands on. There's a personal connection, right? You have your clinicians who say, hey, I'm loyal to this imaging brand because that's what I've used most of my career. I'm loyal to this because, you know, this is what I've used. I like their controls. I like all those things. Many people, and so you also have more an intimate interaction with the customers, correct? Because they're asking you, how do I set this piece of equipment up? Oh, I'm on this monitor. I'm not getting what I need to see at the central station, et cetera. So you have that intimate customer interaction as opposed, and I'm not making a value judgment on this, how many of us can raise our hand and say, what's the manufacturer of the air handler on the roof? We don't know.
No.
Okay, what kind of boiler and chiller? The customers don't know. They know, of course, they know the output. Right, they know if they're too warm, they know if they're too cold, they know if something environmentally is not working. But it's almost like a built-in advantage for the HCM person or built-in work requirement for that personal interaction with our customers. Not that our folks in facilities don't. So I please hope this is coming across the way I want to. So what can you do about that? I would say whatever you can share. Just like, you know, the Joint Commission is open to everybody about the physical environment. We have people here that we can provide counsel. We can set up meetings with accredited customers anytime. And that's what we're here for, especially at the central office.
That's a good point. I think a lot to, you know, if you considered the relationship from biomed to C-suite to IT department to facilities to the general clinical areas in a hospital, they're very much compartmentalized. They're isolated sometimes to where we don't know what those particular areas have going on. And you raise a good point to the fact that, you know, we inherently have a very good ecosystem to understand, you know, for instance, part components. Like, I never thought of it, to be honest, that way. When you think of, like, you know, what's this part on a roof? Well, we would never know. But when you consider walking around a hospital, you see the stuff day to day. You see the different type of OEMs, the different types of equipment, the what's being used, what's not. And it's kind of like it almost just kind of just becomes part of the background to where you don't really take that into consideration. So, I would imagine facilities has that inherent just built-in stress that we maybe don't get to experience day-to-day in biomed, which we experience our own stresses, but yeah.
Chase, I'm going to borrow that term you use, the ecosystem, the HCM ecosystem. I love that. And that's a great way to describe it and to characterize some of the contrast.
The Joint Commission's role is to ensure our facility meets conditions set so that they may be accredited. I understand documentation of medical devices, whether from an internal or outsourced, are held to the same standard. If the outsourced company is unable or does not wish to remedy that documentation, how much time bounds are we given to correct it via another source? So this kind of comes back to the vendor you spoke of. So what is the time frame? What are the parameters that people can operate with?
So as I indicated, and you know, documentation is expected at the time that, you know, it's asked for. Now, you have a, let's just say, walk you through a scenario, a theoretical scenario. You have a surveyor that says, hey, you know, we're coming out of COVID, so I'm particularly concerned about how you maintain your ventilators. So let's do a report on ventilators. And let's just say, you know, I'm the manager, and just so happens I had a dental appointment in the morning, so I'm not planning on coming in till afternoon after lunch. And so the surveyor may say, you know what? Okay, Herman is the one that has, you know, everyone can run a general inventory. But I just want to look at ventilators. And you tell me Herman is the one that has that skill set. Okay, we'll wait. I'm going to do mid-survey. I'm going to pick up after lunch and conduct the survey. Get that documentation for me. Well, Herman comes in. For one reason or another, he doesn't get the message that they need that documentation on ventilators. And so the surveyor, life safety surveyor, concludes the day and moves on and may leave, although the survey may be continuing. Well, he didn't provide the documentation. The surveyor issued Herman an IOU, and we still didn't get that specific information when it was asked for. And so that's an example of something that would be cited. Now, let's just say it was cited and you have that deficiency on your report. All deficiencies, you have to show that you are compliant within 60 days of receiving your final report. So we've already realized you can't submit a clarification because you just were late, right? But you have to show, or you have to demonstrate or attest to the fact that, yeah, you did have that information, or you do at least now. You have to submit, organizations have to submit what they call an evidence of standards compliance. And when you submit it, you can say, yes, you know, we didn't have that at the time, but we do have that. Now, if it's a regular survey, we won't go back on site to you know, to look at that document. But it's part of your agreement with us is when you attest to something, it's true.
What about from, let's say, if it's like a third party, for instance? So if you have like an outsourced vendor that just doesn't get you the paperwork.
It would be the same. Okay. So it would be the same, Chase. It would be, there is no allowances for, you know, or I'm going to say allowance. For if it's not a hospital staff member, so to speak, because if it's outsourced, that outsourced company is representing the hospital's interest.
Sure.
I'll put it in another way that someone asked me that. I think it was at the AAMI conference. You're an accredited organization. What does that mean? That means you have agreed to the accreditation requirements to receive funding for your Medicare and Medicaid patients, Medicare patients. It's still your Medicare patients you're taking care of. And so the fact that you've given that task to a vendor does not change that responsibility that you have to provide the support and services for the patients that you're receiving reimbursement for.
Because at the end of the day, the services being rendered belong to you, the hospital, the facility that is trying to get the accreditation renewal.
Exactly.
That's all of our questions, sir. We got all through right. Them pretty good. It's been like on the bucket list to get you on. It's been a long endeavor, but I appreciate we're finally here for you guys listening. If you are watching it on just my show, either listening on YouTube, Spotify, or what have you, make sure to check out, with MD Publishing, because I am going to make this available so some of you guys can get your CEU credits as well. It's kind of just like my little way of donating the show to, you know, help continue your guys' credentials as well, maintain that CHTMC, et cetera. Herman, I appreciate you being on today. It's a, you know, appreciate what you do to continue, you know, taking care of our facilities through the surveyor spectrum and, you know, from one biomed to another as well. Even though you're still biomed, you'll always be a biomed. It's been a pleasure having you on, sir. And, you know, thank you. Thank you for making the time.
My pleasure. You know, as I say, when I do these, I hope you can tell that I like doing this. So, because I do.
If you didn't, you wouldn't be doing it.
Yep.
So, for anybody, if you wouldn't mind just leaving a comment, like, subscribe, wherever you may be taking in the podcast, appreciate you watching, and may the beard be with you. Thank you.
Bearded. Biomed.